Gemine, or Gemine, Gemine, I don't know, G-E-M-E-A, or M-E-I-N. That was the title song off of their first CD. Or is it her first CD? I don't even know that. I should have done my research, right, Sambo? I got to know about this music. Good for a Girl. Anyhow, that was the name of the song, the name of the CD. And then finally, we had Jessica Duke doing Dance With Me from the Pittsburgh Songwriters Circle Collection 2023. Where's Sambo? Oh, here he is.
Hey!
This is... thanks, everybody, for listening. I will be back... Yeah, I'll be back next Friday. I don't know what I'll be doing then, but, you know, whatever it is, it won't be what I did today. So, you know, if you didn't like this, try me next week. You'll hear something different. This is WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Soft River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
.7 FM WRHU in Hempstead, New York, 89.5 FM Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert in New York, and we have two very exciting South African guests joining us today. If our guests could introduce themselves for the public, we would appreciate it very much. My Wayway, we'll start with you.
Thank you very much for having me in your radio. And then thanks for your listeners for giving us time to talk to them and listen to us. My name is Mawewe Nkwashu. I am based in Limpopo. I'm working with Tiswe, which is actually having its head office in Cape Town. Thank you.
And Nora, if you could introduce yourself for everybody listening.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you to your listeners. I am Nora Mlondobozi. I am based also in Limpopo and a member of Rural Women Assembly. And at the moment, I'm speaking with you. I'm in Free State. We are having a feminist school for Rural Women Assembly South Africa. Thank you.
Now, before we get into anything further in the interview, I would like to know, and I think everybody in the public would like to know, about the history of both organizations. If Mawewe, if you could tell us a little bit more about the Trust for Community Outreach and Education, and Nora, if you could tell us a little bit more about the Rural Women's Assembly in South Africa. Either one of you could start.
Okay, I can start. I am Rural Women Assembly South Africa. It was started almost 14 years. It was launched in Limpopo, but we had five countries from the SADC. In fact, Rural Women Assembly is not a South African movement only. It is in the 10 countries of the SADC, where we are pushing the issues of the fighting for the rights of women, issues like climate change, GBV, land access, and seed access. This is our main issues that we are fighting for as Rural Women Assembly. And in South Africa, we are in six provinces. That is Limpopo, Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Free State. That's where I am today.
Well, TISO is an acronym for Trust for Community Outreach and Education. This is an organization that is almost 41 years old. We are working in five provinces of the South African country, and we are now trying to make some inroads towards the sixth province. We are working in Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Free State, where Nora is, and Limpopo. But we are trying to make some inroads towards the eastern part of Limpopo, which is Bushbuck Ridge. And we are an organization that is working with smallholder farmers. We don't only work with them, but we have got in our programs, we've got what we call in our own context, streams, working streams. It's thematic areas that we are operating in. One of them is movement building, because we are trying to organize smallholder farmers and the landless people to become a movement that can actually fight for their rights, especially when it comes to issues of inequality, land access and access to clean water and so on. The other stream is food sovereignty, which of course is the backbone of our work. We are working with smallholder farmers in communities from all the five provinces that I did mention here. And then we are also having this other stream that is called democratization of governance, because we believe that when there are people who are deprived of opportunities of participating in some of the decision-making, critical decision-making within their own spaces and settlements. So we are working towards that. We are saying to us that if this is a democratic country, then people should have, free access to information, free access to decision-making, free access to participation in whatever that affects or concerns them. The other stream is on It's movement building. I already mentioned movement building, food sovereignty, democratization of rural governance. We also have such desk that deals with issues of farm workers, farm dwellers, and that is part of what we are doing as an organization. Look, we are mostly concentrating on and the rural spaces. That's where we are actually focusing on. The reason being that these are the most affected communities. We are a community-based organization, and we understand the challenges that our people are being faced with. Hence, we come up with these streams that I'm talking about now. The other stream that is very critical for us is the climate justice, the work that we do with issues of climate change and so on. We are also working on issues of the marine resources, because we believe that the sea also belongs to everyone. It doesn't matter whether you are poor, rich, or whatsoever. So this is part of what we are doing.
How did you get involved with Rural Women's Assembly, Nora?
Rural Women Assembly, it's almost, I can say it's almost a women wing from TCOE. So we are concentrating on the issues of women. We are working with women because women are struggling. For instance, they are the backbone of every family. And for each and every family to survive, it needs a woman who can provide. So as women, we are struggling, for instance, to have to access land to feed our family. So we are struggling for, as women, we are pushing that women should also be given land so that we can be able to support our families. As you know that in South Africa at the moment, we have a high rate of malnutrition, poverty and hunger because women do not have land. If women can be given land, these cases that I'm referring to, they can be reduced. So, for instance, we have a campaign called One Woman, One Hectare, where we presented this campaign to our government that women should be given land. So, but unfortunately, it was turned to one household, one woman, which we, as Rural Women Assembly, we are not agreeing with what the government is saying. So we want women to be given land that they can be registered in their own land so that they can do whatever they want. And in the land that we want to acquire from the government, that's where we are going to practice agroecology, which is our main focus as Rural Women Assembly. We are moving away from industrial agriculture and practice agriculture practice agroecology, which is safe to everybody.
Emma Wewe, same question. What got you involved?
I'm from a rural area. My father was working in steel firms. He couldn't afford to take care of all of us. My mother had to go to the fields and work on the field for us to be able to survive. That actually motivated me to say that, well, I can understand that there are so many opportunities that one could pursue in future to bring some change in our livelihoods. But farming, working on the land, is the main thing, because one, I can sleep without a blanket, but I will hardly sleep with an empty stomach. It's very difficult. So I took it from my parents that working with doing farming, it's one way of creating a better space for you not to become a beggar.
Now okay. I want to transition back to Nora, though, for a moment. You were saying about your agroecology hubs. Explain what those are and how it makes everything work for the farmers and for land and for the people without having to go through the industrial system.
Agroecology is an alternative means of food production that it's not harmful to the environment. The food that is produced through agroecology system, it's not harmful to any person. We are saying that we practice agroecology because we want to produce or we want our communities to be healthy. Unlike the industrial agriculture that you need to put in chemicals and pesticides that are poisonous. We put poison into our food and expect people to be healthy. That is not reality. Instead of doing that, we are saying that we have to produce food that is healthy and not with chemicals. So as we speak now, we are saying that South Africa is food secured. But how many people are going to sleep without food? Because the industrial way of food production is not for the local people, but it is for the export market and it is for the profit. If you don't have money, it means that you will sleep without food, despite we being South Africa being food secured. Food is there, but it is not accessible to other group of people. So with agroecology, we are farming food that will be accessible to every person. Our surrounding will have access to food. So the right to food is enshrined in our constitution. And also, it is enshrined in the UNDROP, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Peasants and People Working on Rural Areas. But we are not realizing that because we are using industrial agriculture that promote profit at the expense of people. So we are saying we do agroecology so that every person can have something on the table every day.
Emma Wewe, going back to you, well, first of all, if you just tune into our show right now, you are listening to the One World Community Radio show all over the One World Community Radio Network, and we thank you very much for tuning in. Going back to Emma Wewe for a moment, just because we were learning a little bit about agroecology hubs, if you could explain what food sovereignty is in regards to TCOE, we would appreciate very much as well.
Look, Nora was just talking about the effects that industrial agricultural produced food has in human lives. We looked at the way industrial agriculture contributes to the greenhouse gas emission or global warming. We looked at the resources at our disposal that we could use to cope. And we found that, well, it's highly impossible for us to cope under industrial agriculture to reduce the emission of greenhouse gases. Except for that, whose seeds are we using when we do industrial? We are using seeds that are being owned by certain companies that are actually simply imposing to say that if you are a farmer, then through the Department of Agriculture, these are the seeds that you should be using. Otherwise, you mustn't be using seeds that are not going to be tolerant to the harsh conditions that are caused by climate change, which is not, in our own view, it's not true. We are indigenous people. Predecessors actually producing without any synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and all of that, but they were living very good, healthy lives. So the idea now to have coping strategies, adaptation and mitigation strategies, we looked at agroecology as an alternative. So we believe that with agroecology, we will be able to restore our own dignity as people. We don't have to be exposed to things that we do not want, things that we believe is not good to the environment, things that we believe that is not even good to our health. So that is where the concept of agroecology was conceived within the TCOE and the constituencies that the TCOE is supporting. It's not like the TCOE is forcing anybody to go to agroecology as an alternative, but it's us who said, if you TCOE, it's farmers who said, if the TSOE wants to support them, TSOE must come with an alternative, because industrial agriculture it's not affordable, and it's not even good for their environment. Now, I said that we have got four streams within the TSOE: climate justice goes together with agroecology. Agroecology, we speak about food sovereignty. If you want to be an agroecological farmer, then you must be food sovereign. You must be seed sovereign. You must not depend on anyone. So food sovereignty simply says that this is food that we know how it was produced. We know the seeds that we actually planted to produce this food. We know how the food was processed up until consumption. It's not something that we just found from the shop shelves and buy without knowing who produced and how it was produced and how it was processed and so on. So that is food sovereignty. We need to own how the means that we use to produce this food up until the level of consumption. The other thing we are saying, because I must also be frank that I'm also a farmer. That's why sometimes you hear me saying that we, within the TSOE, we believe that people must be given the privilege to actually contribute towards their own livelihoods. And that is where they came up with the issue of traditional and indigenous seeds recovery. So we said, well, this is the way to go. That's how the whole idea to introduce your agroecology hubs came in. Because we said they need to have a proper way of propagating these seeds. They need to have a proper way of selecting these seeds. They need to have a proper way of saving these seeds. So the issue of agroecology hubs was the concept of agroecology hubs was conceived. It was also accepted by the farmers. So currently, as we speak, we have got more than 35, if my memory serves me well, because we are working in a very vast area. Like I indicated that we work with five provinces. We have got more than 35 hubs where farmers are self-managing these hubs to show that they are really serious about agroecology. They are really serious about recovering their indigenous and traditional seeds. So now the TSOE supports this agroecology, of course, with resources and equipment. I'm saying resources because when they have to move around, look for seeds, sometimes you will have to support them with transport and so on, because they move around their own provinces to try and recover, collect, gather these seeds for multiplication at the agroecology centers. So these are the very important things that the TSOE is doing in terms of supporting the agroecology work. So food sovereignty is about people owning the processes of producing food up until the level of consumption. So that is what we do as TSOE to support these farmers. The other thing, we are saying that when it's not only the farmers that are actually affected by the intoxicated food, this is how things are, have assisted them as well to start popularizing their way of food production amongst the communities within their own jurisdictions. So the simplest way for us to do that was to say that let's help them to have their own markets where they will tell people how these foods were produced. So it's food sovereignty, and we own the markets where people are accessing this food. Of course, very affordable because it's direct from the farm, processed at the farm, and then you don't need the transport. It's within your own area. That is what I could share for now.
Thank you, Mawewe. And Nora, going back to you now for a moment, if you could discuss for the listeners this idea of seed saving and how it benefits the rural women and how it benefits the environment, if you could discuss that for a moment.
Thank you so much. You know, seed, we are saying seed, it's life. Without seed, there is no life. Hence, we are, as Rural Women Assembly, we are saying that we are the guardian of seed. So, like Mawewe was saying, that it's we talk about food sovereignty, not just food security, because we want to own our food. We want to also know how it was produced. So with our seed, we are able, we are sure that we can, we will not ever depend on somebody else. If we concentrate on the industrial seed and seeds that are coming from somewhere, what if the following day we wake up and they say, we don't want to send seed from to South Africa? It means that we are going to, all we are going to starve to death. So hence, as Rural Women Assembly, we are saving our own seeds because we know that whenever we plant our seeds, we will be able to reproduce it because we have found these seeds from our ancestors. They are coming from far, far, far back. But we are still using it today because we can reproduce it. And whenever we use our seed, we don't have to go and buy chemicals that we have to put on our seed. We grow our seed with the traditional knowledge that was passed to us by our ancestors. So for us to be able to take care of our environment, to mitigate climate change, there is no other way of doing that rather than to use our own seeds to create healthy communities. We have to use our own seeds because we know that with our own seeds, we are going to benefit everyone. It's going to benefit not only us as farmers, but also the communities that we are living with. We are able to share our seeds. We are able to multiply our seeds. Though we have seed laws that are saying if we multiply, if we share our seeds, it's illegal. But we are saying as Rural Women Assembly, we will continue to save our seeds, to use our seeds, to multiply our seeds until all farmers, until all small-scale farmers has acquired this seed. We cannot turn back and go and use the industrial seeds. We are going to use our own seeds. Whether the government allows us or not, we are going to use it.
And Mawewe, similar question. How does the seed saving benefit your people as the farmers and with that, the environment overall on a grand scale?
Okay, first and foremost, let's look at the kind of seeds that we're talking about. You see, sometimes people believe that hybrid seeds are the best because they produce very quickly. But we look at the impact that climate change has in terms of weather patterns, in terms of the rain distribution patterns, in terms of pests and a lot of diseases that we are faced with, which were not the same in the past couple of years. Because a lot of pests are migrating to our area because it's very hot and they do well in very hot temperatures. So hybrids cannot do well under those circumstances. Secondly, the type of seeds that we say as TSOE and the constituencies that we're supporting are the seeds that can cope, seeds that are tolerant to whatever weather condition, climatic condition that is there because they are indigenous. The other thing that we looked at is that it's not only the seeds that one could say, if this is the right way to use, domesticated. There are wild species that are still useful to people. I remember one time I was talking to this elderly person because we believe that in food sovereignty and agroecology, we need to also give space to organic intelligences, our own elderly people, to share with us. And this person was saying to me, because I was asking him, how did they actually identify wild fruits that are edible to human beings? They said, we lived very well with wild animals, especially the baboons and the monkeys. Whatever they ate, we knew that it was safe for human consumption. So these are the seeds that we're talking about. We are looking at seeds that can reproduce, as Nora has said. We don't have money. People don't have money to buy patented seeds that are actually costing exorbitantly. We are looking at seeds that can tolerate the harsh temperatures, the harsh weather climatic conditions in our area. So the seeds that we're talking about now are small grains. You will remember that in Africa, when we speak about maize, maize is not originally from Africa. It's an exotic species. But it was traditionalized because it was continuously reproduced. But currently, unfortunately, that traditional seed has been taken away. It's no longer here. We are now relying on hybrid maize seeds. So which is not tolerant anyway to diseases and the harsh climatic conditions and so on. We are saying to ourselves that the best seeds that we should multiply and preserve are those that can reproduce, those that are coming from originally from where we are. So the small grains like your sorghum, a variety of them. The small grains like your millet, all varieties of millet. There are quite a number of varieties of millets. Your seeds, leguminous seeds like your cowpeas, your pigeon peas. These are seeds that originate from these areas. These are seeds that are tolerant to any climatic conditions. These are seeds that you can put on the soil on a rainy day. And if the rain stops, the seed will remain there until good rains come so that it germinates. So these are the seeds that we're talking about. The other thing that we are saying should also be part of our seeds. Nora was saying that seed is life. And there is nobody who's breathing now who did not have food that comes from a seed today. As we speak, you and I can attest to that. We have had our breakfast, we have had our lunch already, maybe, because of seeds. So how do we befriend these seeds? How do we become friends with these seeds? You cannot become a friend with something that cannot reproduce. So that's why we are saying we are working on recovering our own indigenous seeds. People should go back to basics, because when you speak about millet meals, somebody who was born in 2000, they don't even know that. So this is our time to revert to our own basic, because with climate change, anything is possible. And above all that, let me say to everyone that the issue of water and food is going to be very serious, more serious than any other thing. Because these are the two things that you cannot live without. So these are the things that we are looking at. We are recollecting and multiplying. We are in the process of building community seed banks where these seeds, because we also involve members of the community, those that are not working on larger scales, but they've got their own backyard spaces where they can grow their veggies and other stuff. We are involving them as well to say, you can multiply your own seeds, bring it to the community seed bank where you will be rest assured that your seeds are safe for future use. This is the project that we are undergoing now, so in support of the smallholder farmers. The other thing is that we are talking to communities to begin to look at some wild species that are going extinct and try to gather seeds so that within their own agroecology hubs, they can begin to multiply those because we need them. Our birds need them. Our small animals need them. It's like we are trying to rebuild our own micro ecosystem. So that is in a nutshell that I can share as of now.
So now I hear you talking about seeds, obviously having access to seeds for communities to be able to grow their own food. But now another issue, which is here in South Africa, where it's even in parliament as we speak, different political parties are talking about it. It's the issue of land. You know, somebody might have lots of seeds that can produce a different food, but now the problem is the issue of land. You know, have you guys thought about that? We know that in South Africa, there was a point even where people are saying that people must bring back the land, even though it's still in talks of that one. But as an organization or people that are advocating for people to have access to seeds or to access to grow their land, have you also thought the issue of land?
Yes, thank you. Today we are saying that black South Africans are poor because they do not have land. And because of that, it pushed us to dependency. We depend on someone else for whatever reason, because we do not have land. So we are pushing, we are still pushing. As Rural Women Assembly, we had a campaign called One Woman, One Hectare, where we believed that if women can be given land, we will be able to produce our own food, the food that we want, using our own seeds with the method that we want to produce food. But instead of that, when we submit the campaign to the Department of Agriculture, to the government, the government did not want to give women land because we are women. They don't want to give us land. But instead of that, they turned our campaign into one household, one hectare. The other reason why we wanted women to have our land, it is because as we look at in our country, we have a lot of GBV and femicide. A lot of women are being killed because they depend on their partners for anything. So we are saying that if women are given land, they will be able to stand for themselves. But when we submit this to the government turned us back and say they, and rather than giving a woman a hectare, they rather give a household. So when we look at the household in South Africa, most of the households in South Africa are under the control of men. And most of these men are the men that are causing this GBV. So we are saying that we need land for us to be able to be free, for us to be able to produce food that we want, to use this land to use to practice agroecology. When land is in the hands of the household and in the hand of the men, our fear is that when these multinational companies comes to our indunas, looking for land, the possibility of our land being sold back to the whites is very high. Like when we say now in the community there where I am coming from, we have a traditional leader who has evicted small-scale farmers, black small-scale farmers, from this little portion that they are having. He evicted them and gave it to the white commercial farmer who has already have a vast of land. And this land that the commercial farmers are having, they are not producing for the local people, but they are producing for the export. That is why we have so many people are going to bed without food, because black South Africans do not have land, especially women do not have land. If you give a woman a land, you assure that the community will go back to bed with food. So we are saying that we need this land. The government should give us land as women so that our communities can reduce the issues of malnutrition. We have children of less than 5 years who are dying of malnutrition. When we say we have food security in South Africa, what is that? We want land that we are going to use it, because the white commercial farmers, they are producing for profit. If you don't have money, you are not going to access food. So we want land for our own, to produce our own food.
Okay, so now, for example, we know that in Zimbabwe, in the past years, under the administration of Mugabe, there was a time where the government was taking the land and give it back to the Zimbabweans, or should I say black Zimbabweans. But now with all that process, you know, in between, it ended up those farmers not making money. You know, it ended up being a mess to a point where it's even affecting Zimbabwe as we speak. So now, as advocate of women's rights and farmers or rural farmers to get back the land and all that, I hear what you're saying. Is there a process in hand? Have you guys thought thoroughly about that? You know, on how, if there was a time or there will be a time where maybe land gets back to the community, how is it going to be sustained? Because it's not easy to run a farm.
Thank you. It is always the case when they want to deny us land, they say that we are not able to use the land. You cannot use the land when you do not have resources. Whites are able to use land because they have access to all the banks. We as black farmers, we do not have any access to these resources. And also our government is not supporting us. It's not giving us resources to be able to use these farms. They give you this farm. Sometimes you find that this farm is no longer in good conditions. You have to resuscitate it. It is your own baby. Our governments do not want to support us. They want us to do what they think. They say we have to produce according to the commercial farmers. We don't want to be commercial farmers. We want to be our own, to use our own system to produce food. Let me give you an example. As we speak now, there are forms that are going out from the Department of Agriculture for farmer support. But this farmer support comes, the condition is that you must have water rights. You must have a form of ownership of that land. So if you don't have that, you are not supported. So even if you have a small portion, there is no support that you can get from the government, because their condition, and they know that you cannot have water rights because all the water rights are given to the white commercial farmers. We don't have any rights of water. And our government knows about it, but they are quiet. They think they are quiet. They are not doing anything about it. So it's obvious, if you are given land, you do not have water, you do not have resources to use that land, you are going to fail. We have no access to the finance bank. They want a lot of things that we cannot afford as blacks. But if our government can have a strategy of supporting us as small-scale farmers and support us according to what we as small-scale farmers, especially the agroecology farmers, what we want, not what they want. If they can accept, they allow us, they give us that opportunity that we tell them what we want, I don't think that we can fail.
Okay, so we're celebrating, obviously, community rural farmers all over the world. What are you guys planning?
What we are planning is just to raise awareness to the women that we have to continue to push for the access to land, access to seed, and the recognition of agroecology as the means of food production. This is what we are going to motivate to encourage the rural women that that will be there to do that for us to be able to be sustainable. Because if we continue to depend on commercial farmers, we will have one day we will have problem. One day we will have a serious problem, because if they stop supplying us with their seeds, we are going to starve to death. So we are going to encourage these women to continue to save seeds, to share indigenous seeds, despite the opposition that we are getting from the government laws. We are going to do that, and we are going to do that because we are also supported by the UNDROP, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Peasants and People Working on Rural Areas, which South Africa has signed. And this declaration has the rights of us as small-scale farmers, the way it says, we have articles that says we have right to seed, right to water, right to land, right to food. So we are going to pull, we are going to motivate our people to push for the recognition or for the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Peasants, because South Africa has signed this declaration 8 years back. But to date, there's no policy for UNDROP implementation. So we are going to push for that.
Let's start with the issue of land and land access. Because now we're talking about seeds, we're talking about multiplication, we're talking about all of this, recovery and stuff. Now, the problem with the issue of land, especially here in South Africa, is that our own system has created what one could say is a deliberate inequality in terms of land access and ownership. Let me give an example. The tenure arrangement, land tenure arrangement, is such that if you reside in an urban or semi-urban space, then for that small piece of land, you would have a title deed. In other words, you will have complete ownership of that small space. But unfortunately, it's a small space. You can just put a house. You cannot have a space for farming and other stuff. You cannot put your livestock and so on. It's just for settlement. That is, you have a title deed for that. Now, there is this other section of land which is called communal land. So communal land, anyone who resides on communal land does not have a complete ownership of that piece of land. Instead, we are given permission to occupy. How should you be given a permission to occupy a land that you have got the birth right to? Because we are born here. Now, that's the problem. We've got a problem with land tenure. That's why you heard Nora saying that it's involved in the eviction of smallholder farmers, because we are just given permission to occupy. So whoever gave you permission to occupy that land, if he or she feels that, well, who are no longer using the land the way they wanted you, they expected you to use it, then they can, at any given point in time, evict you. So that's the problem that we are faced with as people in this country. From the area where I reside, just adjacent to the villages, we have got farmers who have got very huge land and title deeds. But just beyond their fence, we have got this community which is clamped in one space, like overcrowded in a very limited land. And they have been offered, I don't know whether this is the right way to say it, they have been given land which they say is communal farmland, not even fertile. But somebody just adjacent to them has got hundreds and hundreds of hectares, and this person is alone. So a community comprising of more than 30,000 homesteads are given less than 100 hectares to work on as a communal farmland. It's a problem. The government that is not ready to try and bridge that gap that exists between huge commercial farmers and smallholder farmers. This is something that I think we need to be advocating for. So within the TCOE, when I said in the beginning that we work with streams, one of the streams is movement building. We have assisted our constituencies to establish their own movement, a movement that will deal with issues of land transformation. Because with us, we're saying that the support that we give is towards agriculture when we do not have land. So this movement is called Inyanda National Land Movement. It's comprised of smallholder farmers and community people, provinces that I said that as TCOE we are supporting communities from. But I think without the will from our political leaders to say there's no need for these people to advocate for land because we know that they are landless. Let's come with a law that will say whoever owns large pieces of land should share with others, especially with members of the communities. We are not saying that we want them to be evicted and we want to take over everything that they have. You see, what happened in Zimbabwe is that when these guys were evicted from the land, they took everything with them, your machinery and all of what they were using for production purposes. And we are also, I mean, media will always tell you a lot of bad things about countries where this kind of revolutionary actions took place. In Zimbabwe, we cannot entirely say that they are in a mess when it comes to food production because we go there and learn from them. Those people are food secure. Those people are food sovereign. You know, in South Africa, we have got farmers. I mean, it is said that we have got, we are food secured. But come to Limpopo where I'm residing and show me any farmer who's producing cereals. Show me any farmer who's producing veggies. They are involved in fruit production from citrus to deciduous fruits for exportations, of course, not for human consumption. So it is us as smallholder farmers who are feeding ourselves. What we need from our government is simple. To make sure that they come up with laws that will say you must not own huge pieces of land alone. We must share. Let's try to bridge that gap. So that is the problem that we are being faced with. As much as we would love to be food sovereign, would love to preserve our own seeds, would love to conserve water because like we are having serious issues of water scarcity in South Africa. But it's even worse where we are in the rural spaces because we don't have infrastructures that would that would save water for both fauna and flora. So this is the problem that we have. We train people on how to harvest rainwater, how to conserve this water, but it's not enough. We need land with water. We need land that is fertile for people to propagate the seeds that we are talking about. So this is the struggle that we are having. I think Inyanda as a movement will continue to advocate for land access, land and water access, but it is not enough if the ears that are listening are not ready to change the status quo when it comes to land ownership. So in the rural spaces, unfortunately, we don't own any land. You are given permission to use that land. If somebody with resources can say, I want to use that land, then you will be evicted. So that's the problem that we are faced with.
Well, Mawewe, you set us up kind of perfectly to conclude it, because of which we do have to wrap this up. You're saying if the ears that are listening and joining your movement, because you've done a lot of work, but clearly there's still a lot more to be done. If you and Nora could both say very quickly where people can find out more information about your organizations, I think that'd be a great way to conclude.
Anyone who wants to contact us as Rural Women Assembly, we have a website. They go to Rural Women Assembly website, and then they will get us there and all our contacts there.
Yes, same with us within the TSOE. We have got a website, but what I would say, because now the TSOE delegated me to talk to the people. They can contact me. I can link them with whoever has got information that they would need, because I'm not having everything that the TSOE is doing within me. I'm only involved in food sovereignty streams. There are other people that are working with climate justice. There are other people who are working with democratization of governance and stuff. So, but my number is 073-606-5506. And if one wants to communicate with me via email, it's mawewenkwashu42@gmail.com. MAWEWEN KHWAS42@gmail.com. So I can always link you with my colleagues. Thank you.
And we thank you both very much for coming on the One World Community Radio Show today. You've been listening to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM, the mother of community radio, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the reason those of us not directly on the sharp end of the violence of ICE agents disappearing brown people off the streets know about it is because we see it. Because people, journalists, but also regular folks, are recording these actions and sharing them with those of the public who care to look. Witness testimony is the reason we are able to resist official claims about people attacking officers or resisting arrest. And you and you can tell how much it matters by the efforts to shut it down. We'll talk about making it a crime to record ice being ice with Matthew Cunningham Cook, writer and researcher working with the Center for Media and Democracy. Also on the show, you could spend a lot of energy trying to make sense of the notion that anyone criticizing Charlie Kirk is more of a threat. The fact that quoting Kirk's own words is enough to get you fired, get your professor to state that we will hunt you down, get your show canceled, get your group sanctioned, that tells you we are not in a good faith debate and that the elite news media are not here to help. Judging by the New York Times, the Donald Trump who promotes the idea that Joe Biden was executed in 2020 and replaced by a robotic clone should be described as having, quote, a penchant for sharing debunked or baseless theories online, close quote. So why not offer the same respect given to his ideas about transgender mice to his ideas about the First Amendment? It comes down to whose ideas we get to hear, which in turn comes down to who gets to own the media outlets that we look to. We'll talk about where structure meets content with Tim Carr, Senior Director of Strategy and Communications at the group Free Press. That's coming up this week on Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. Department of Homeland Security head Kristi Noem, nominally.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.